Cult TV Club. And with us today, boldly going where everybody's been before, we have Lisa. Hello, Lisa.
Captain, I'm afraid.
We have Alex.
Captain, I'm not as afraid.
Not as afraid. Hello, Jerry.
I'm never afraid.
And we have Jeanette.
He's certainly not afraid.
And Justin, that's myself. So, everybody's just watched City on the Edge of Forever, Star Trek Series 1. I don't know which episode it is.
It was the last episode of the first season. Last episode of season one, 1966.
There we go.
So, from the get-go, I need to make a full confession. So, I call myself a Trekkie. I always have.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the first original series Star Trek episode I've ever seen.
Yeah.
A lot of my knowledge is probably stuff that's kind of that stuff that you just kind of accumulate, but actually sitting down and watching an episode from start to finish.
So you're more Next Generation DS9 sort of era?
Not so much DS9, but definitely Next Gen, definitely Voyager, definitely Enterprise.
Well, sure.
Just chucking in, you do know there is a new Star Trek series coming out.
Yes.
I know, right?
I'm not a Trek, but I definitely grew up with a series because my brother was a fan of it at the time, so I kind of watched a few of the Picard era stuff and a lot of Voyager, but a bit of DS9 as well, so I'm kind of that same similar background, but not as nerdy about it.
Well, I remember as a child watching the original series on TV in colour, because we had a colour TV back then, because I lived in the UK area, so colour was around first.
I first watched, you showed me a couple of episodes. I hadn't seen Star Trek at all until I started going out with you.
Which is many years ago now.
20 years ago.
Yes. And that was back in the days of Next Generation.
Mm.
So I'm much more familiar with Next Generation as well.
Mm.
And I think you may have borrowed a couple of videos back in the days of video.
I did.
Yeah. We actually had a few video stores that now closed under Brosso and had like a whole row of just the episodes.
Yeah.
I actually have copies of most of them on video.
Well, I used to watch the original, but it was probably on reruns, I think.
Mm.
Not when it was first being shown. And I remember watching this episode particularly, but also many others. But by the time it got to Second Generation, oh no, that was too newfangled for me. I found some of the episodes in Next Generation to be a bit, they went off the rails a little bit in season two.
This is written by a very famous author as well.
It is, Harlan Ellison, that's right.
And he's probably one of the most famous authors. Plus it had a very famous actress in it, which was unusual for Star Trek back in that era as well.
And again, they're now technically famous, but you know, I know what you mean.
She was ultra famous back in the day.
And of course, we selected this episode because, of course, he had recently passed away.
Does someone want to give a quick recap of what this episode was about?
If you're listening to this episode, the probability is that
or at the very least, Memory Alpha is the Star Trek wiki. Just look it up.
Yes.
City on the Edge of Forever.
Apparently, Roddenberry rewrote the script and made changes to it that Ellison was furious about. He didn't like his scripts being tampered with, and that's why he never wrote another.
Scotty was supposed to be a drug dealer.
Right.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
For this episode, is one of the little things that went along the way.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, that wouldn't fit in with the ethos of Roddenberry, because all his characters.
And probably even be worse in terms of 60s TV execs probably wouldn't approve of that.
Star Trek was viewed as really progressive.
The idea that there would be a central sort of government with representation from nations all across.
I actually remember reading a story about how Martin Luther King convinced Nichelle Nichols to stay on because she was thinking of leaving, and also hearing stories of Colin Black actresses say they were inspired by seeing her be a character that actually, I mean, her character wasn't exactly well-rounded in the episode itself, but just the fact that
none of the characters were well-rounded, really.
No,
I mean, Kirk to Spock to
they were formulaic, very formulaic.
And one thing I think we all cracked up when we did watch it tonight, that Captain, I'm afraid. I watched the Star Trek movies, and her acting was so much better, and so it's not her fault.
It's script writing, and it's supposed to be melodramatic in the first place. It's just entirely filled with ham, the script. It's just
Well, the whole thing's ham. Star Trek is ham.
Did anybody think that any of the acting was particularly good?
Kirk.
So we talked about the acting. It's a bit hammy, but what about the rest of the production values? Was anything particularly jarring you found in the episode?
Found first scene on the bridge of the ship. I've been watching a lot of Voyager lately, and just that stark difference between the bridge of the ship from Next Gen and Voyager, and with the original series, I expected there to be a bit of a because of the era and because of the camera value, you know, the production values and things like that. It was strange in that sense that there was the shaky cam, but it was obviously not an intentional shaky cam. There was someone's knocked the tripod shaky cam, but they're all just kind of chilling on the ship. You know, they're all kind of leaning back on the consoles, and whereas everything seems a lot more military on the next gen and the Voyager bridge of the ship. And I found that interesting. That was jarring for me.
And also I think as well, like the series, it just seems very action-based. Like, if it was a Next Generation episode, it would have spent the first, like, 5 minutes explaining the technical babble behind why they're in the area, what the thing is that's manipulating time, and all the details that aren't really necessary for the plot of the episode. But they would have still had, oh, and we're entering into fuggle-fluggle radio things. And that's the reason why the ship is doing the whatever.
But that's not... The 1960s was an era where nobody knew had technobabble.
Yeah.
And they didn't really invent the technobabble until we actually had technology developing. So when you actually see the 1960s version of Star Trek, what I think you're actually seeing is the beginning of the possibility of technology of the future.
Mm.
I mean, when you look at the iPads that they actually use, the pads they use, we have now got iPads.
Yeah.
Mm. Communicators, we now have communicators. Fortunately, we don't have a tricorder, a medical tricorder.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
But we are getting there, and there are people trying to invent it.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that, the doors, I mean, they weren't common.
To a large degree, we do see fiction leading technology
development.
And Star Trek was one of those first things to begin down that path of actually projecting forward. Yeah.
Many scientists to actually go out and invent things. I watched a documentary very recently about, again, the science of Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a bit about the museum in Seattle. And you had people there saying they were making it because of Star Trek.
Of
course.
Yes.
They were inventing it because of Star Trek. So that's the really, I think, interesting thing it did.
And I remember listening to a podcast episode earlier this year. It was the same similar thing where they're talking about they made computers with that black background and the blue screen. Who came up with it first? And they actually think the sci-fi came up with it first, and then the scientists created it because that's what was expected. It's the science copying the science fiction, not the other way around.
Yes.
And same with the pads
design
and the
satellites, for instance, are all because of Robert Heinlein, way back here.
And Arthur C. Clarke.
And all of those people, because they actually mentioned those things as part of their science fiction ideas.
Mm.
And yes, you're right. I think somebody has come up with an idea, and then someone says, oh, can we do it?
Yeah.
So we've talked about the technology. Well, what about socially? Have you got an idea for us to follow them socially, or have they predicted something that we should head towards?
Well, there are very few women in this episode.
Well, regardless of that, though, I think the fascist aspect of that is very telling at the moment, and it's very much a Vulcan episode, and I don't mean that as a Mr. Spock, because it's all about one of the Vulcan ideology things, which is the many outweigh the need of the one.
Yeah.
So it's really that.
Yes.
So we have to get rid of the one to make sure the many are okay.
Mm.
So, in fact, it looks at Vulcan ideology and then brings that out. Which they love to do in the early Star Trek.
That's brilliant.
I never
even thought about that side of things. Yeah.
Especially, like, even though technically the fascists are the enemies, like, oh, if Germany had a bomb. And the only thing is they couldn't have. It's like the history episode. Like, I am a bit of a nerd about this era.
Mm.
And, like, this couldn't have happened because, A, the US was neutral until the Pearl Harbor bombings. So they weren't going to get involved anyway.
Star Trek love attacking the fascists.
Because they're in... There's a clear good bad guy without questioning what it's about.
Was there anything else jarring about this?
I have a whole section written down just called asterisk, casual sexism.
It's not casual, it's actually implied. It's
blatant.
Because this is 1966.
I love...
They did have men in the first season of Star Trek who wore skirts.
Oh,
I've seen pictures of
that. So there is an opportunity.
But then again, that was like 20 years after this episode was made, so...
I think one thing that, as soon as a girl comes in, Joan Collins is shown, it's the soft filter, it's the soft, dreamy, romantic music, and it just kind of goes from there.
They did that to Kirk later.
They did do that to Kirk. And something I find really interesting in a lot of shows, and I don't think it's just a 1960s thing, I think it happens all the way through. Mm. One thing that maybe I've just not met the right person, but there's something about love that just makes a man stare into space. for a long period of time. Maybe my husband and I have to have a talk when we get home, because he's never done that to me.
You've never done that to me either, Justin.
It's not about that. It's about communication and how to impart emotion on the stage or whatever. So that was a technique, I think. Woe is me, I'm suffering.
And even in the 80s and 90s, my mum used to watch a lot of those daytime Days of My Lives, Young and the Restless, Bold and the Beautiful. And I think they still do that in those shows, don't they?
It's your standard.
Yeah, because it's easy to just convey emotion by having the emotion.
Yes,
woe on their face.
Yeah.
These days they have sweat drops on anime characters.
Yeah.
He falls in love with her when he first meets her.
He falls in love with everybody, doesn't he?
Yeah.
It's just his standard expression, but
There's
not much ground for that relationship, so that's the only way they can imply there's something going on, because there's no foundation for it. So
I suppose we have to say it is episodic TV, where every episode is different from the next episode.
And it always goes back to status quo, which is what really annoys me about all of Star Trek was that you always knew how the episode would end, so I was predicting how they're going to reset and fix everything by the end of the episode.
Isn't that the same every movie we watch? The good guys are going to win.
Not anymore.
Yeah, the good guys may win, but at a cost, things change.
We've never seen the Nazis win.
Their life at the end is totally different to the beginning.
Yeah, like the idea of, let's say, series now. I'm just thinking of some of my favourite shows. It's like the stuff that's going on in the fourth season is different to what's going on in the first season, because the characters change, because the events change. So basically, like, the series evolves in such a way you can't really go backwards. You can't really, learn lessons.
There were production things within television in the US that made episodic TV quite difficult, because you couldn't predict the order in which they were going to play your episodes.
And more importantly,
so they would just randomly mix up your episodes and play them at random. Yeah. When some TV shows did go episodic, it became an enormous problem for them that that the stations would actually mix up the
Big Five.
And just the fact that I think by the time this episode was made, they already had their repeats set up done, so they needed to make sure that each episode could be slotted for any hour of any TV channel anywhere in the world at any time, so it had to be an episode like that.
Even up until recently, that would still happen with a show, but I watch a lot of Netflix. Star Trek Discovery is made for Netflix. It's made to be binge-worthy. It follows a storyline.
It's made by Netflix.
Exactly. And it's made in that platform, so it doesn't follow that episode, because the whole point is you watch one.
And even TV shows on Netflix,
it's not so much tune in next week, it's keep watching, because 5 seconds time the next episode's starting, and we want you to sit down and watch the whole series in order. We don't want you to watch one once a week and be able to pick up, if you missed last week's episode, it doesn't matter, because it's all going to be the same again.
And more importantly, the fact that back in the day, say when Doctor Who first aired, they assumed that that's the only time to air the episode, so they'd assume no one would ever see it again. And today, you assume people are going to be watching it forever and ever and ever.
That's right.
And so you can have things be more complicated.
You can stop it, you can start it, and you can pick it up where you left off.
Well, in England, they didn't repeat Doctor Who.
So was that episode, for those who have watched the series, I don't know how many, the few of us have, was that representative, the episode we just watched, was that representative?
Unless you watched the other 74 episodes, you wouldn't be able to say.
So what do you think, Jay? Was it representative?
No, it was definitely more outside.
A bit of an outlier.
And it was...
That's what I think.
Probably why... It also, this episode actually cost $50,000 over budget. Right. So they put more money into that. And when you think 1966, $50,000 was
a lot of money.
And it was their last episode for that season. Never mind all the money you spent in preparation. So, no, this wasn't your normal, let's have an enemy, fight it, get back. This was philosophical. It was about social issues. It was about history. It was about how one person could actually make a difference in the world, regardless of whether it was good or bad.
Did Star Trek tend to use time travel a lot?
No.
Or is this... Yeah, they did.
Later.
I didn't think there was as much... I thought maybe it was an outlier because they used time travel, but obviously they used it quite a bit.
Later.
And lots of different universes. Mm. They were proposing alternate universes way earlier than even scientists were thinking of.
One thing I probably was dismayed with as far as the cliche that I know of Star Trek is I don't believe any red shirts died in this episode.
Not one.
No.
And there was so many of them.
Yeah.
She wasn't wearing red.
Was this a disappointment?
I was promised a red shirt would die tonight, and it did not happen.
The thing is, you probably had more people actually, that's something that comes out, you probably had more people die in the 1966 version than you had in later versions. So the consequences of being a red shirt on Star Trek, I think, reflected the era where life was very much less valuable than it is in the later series.
Doctor Who in the 60s had the highest body count of any TV series.
So that has changed. Where not every 5 minutes there was someone dying in Star Trek.
That's it.
No consequence.
And I guess, you know,
collateral damage.
Being used to the fact that it was a big deal when someone died on a TV show, like, I think I was a little bit perturbed when that homeless guy with the phaser, I'm like, hang on, no. Did he just kill himself? What's going on there? So I'm not saying I was shaken and distraught, but it's still funny. Like, what?
It was almost comedy. Tragedy.
You have to remember this was actually called a wagon train to the stars. This is Cowboys and Indians.
Yes.
In a futuristic way. And what's his name? Gene Roddenberry was a policeman before he actually was a writer. So he was a motorcycle policeman. So he was coming from a place where crime and death and all of those things were part of your normal happenstance. And to forget, it's America. Regardless, I mean, death in America is not treated the same way that we...
Yes.
Look at all the shoot 'em movies. I mean, how many people die in there when you see thousands? How many Indians die in cowboy movies? You know, death is inconsequential in a lot of American TV.
So what about relevance to today? How relevant do you think that is, you know, the morals that they were teaching or the ideas, or for that matter, how viewable do you think this is in looking at it today? Was it just laugh-worthy the whole way through, or was it worth watching? Or
it was okay. I don't think...
Would you watch the next episode?
I think it's more I want to watch the next episode because I've not seen the series and I suppose I ought to. But just the fact that the whole... It just feels as though it's so different compared to, at the very least, the Star Trek series that I saw when I was younger. Next Generation, that sort of thing. It's just so much a different series that I'm not sure you can really compare it to Star Trek today.
I think the ethos of Star Trek is based in this series.
I think it is. I agree.
No matter what, whether you watch The Next Generation or Voyager or DS9 or any of the new incarnations, Destiny and so on, Picard... If it wasn't for Roddenberry's ideology of everybody's the same, everybody can work together, you're supposed to be fair, there's no poverty, there's no homelessness, there's no
This is how the world
is. This is how it is. And in every episode of Star Trek, I think, still
has that
says
as a basis.
That.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we, although I must admit Destiny is not quite the same.
Discovery.
Deliberately so.
Yeah.
That's deliberately so. You really need to watch, I think, if you haven't seen the original series, to see where the ethos of Star Trek comes from.
We probably need to come back to Star Trek and a completely different episode.
Yes.
As far as relevance, though, I think that... And you touched on it before, Jerry, that moral quandary, that the needs of the many outweigh that needs of the one. And I think that's still a really valid thing, regardless it's a 1960s version. Those themes are still relevant to what we just watched tonight. So it's still something that's being explored in TV series today, but just in different production values and different script writers. It's still the same moral quandary that we're still examining decades later.
Yeah, philosophically, it was the trolley problem, wasn't it?
Yes.
So the production... values, really. I mean, obviously some of the sparkly sci-fi stuff was very not so sparkly. But when they actually arrived in 1930, I thought that was really well done, the depiction of 1930.
Which probably wouldn't be far away from 1960.
That's the thing. It's like this episode is further away from us than the episode was from 1930.
It had a good feel. It looked well done. So
they probably could have still gone to the opera shop and bought
it.
No different from us doing a show about the 80s,
is it? It's like 1981, basically.
Though I was... and that's a symbol of the 60s and probably a symbol of the 30s, but Joan Collins with that posh mid-Atlantic accent, which it felt jarring because I'm going, that's not how I expected
people... She's English, so...
is that a bit of an English accent in there?
Not a mid-American. It's actually her upper crust...
Yes.
English accent.
It's an English accent. I thought it was maybe a posh American.
Posh English.
Posh English,
Well, I thought it was like American Heartland Depression era, but it was New York Depression era. And I thought, it just seems like this rich upper crust, you know, aristocratic, which I thought was aristocratic American, aristocratic English woman, you know, looking after a boarding house in the slums of Depression era New York.
It was a bit...
It yeah. seemed
and
a bit
unusual. And a fairy tale. Yeah, she seems a little bit fairy tale.
Although, I think the Americans do think the good Christian woman of that era who didn't yeah. had her own money needed to do good works.
Yeah.
To actually, they wouldn't do anything. They wouldn't go and invent rockets.
Impossible. Mm.
They would go yeah. and do good yeah. works.
I'm
you
sure
know what I mean?
That's not impossible, but it did look jarring.
For today, I think yeah. it would have.
I actually got such a lovely surprise when she's got up on the stage and she had a little book, which I thought was a hymn book. She's standing next to the piano. I'm going, and all of the other homeless men are going, oh, you know, the price of admission, you gotta listen to her hammer on. I'm thinking, oh yeah, she's gonna go up and play the piano and do some hymns or something. And instead comes up and
or something.
Yes. And instead she stands up and starts talking about men travelling to other planets and things like that. Yeah. I'm going, this is like, yes. for real. But that was the point, I guess. But it was, it cracked me up.
Don't forget the 1960s is also the era they went to the moon.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah. So you had the Kennedy era when he was assassinated, what, 63?
Yeah.
63. He was assassinated. He had actually announced NASA and we were going to the moon. So it was an era of looking outward towards space.
Yes.
Yeah.
And doing all that, which is probably why Star Trek really hit home as well.
And so we watched, then when she's doing it, you kind of go, oh, well, of course, because it's a science fiction show and it's, and it's in the 1960s. But looking at it thinking, oh, this is a lady in the 1930s and she's going to come up on stage and bore these homeless men, that was actually the last thing I was expecting.
Oh, religion and Star Trek don't mix that
But yeah.
Roddenberry was an atheist, though.
Yes, he
didn't actually bring in
as you'll find out from Picard later. I guess, wrapping up, what's the general verdict? Are people going to go off and watch more Star Trek?
What's that? Picard's coming out with a new episode. They might not watch the original series.
Well,
I think I might. I think I might.
You might go back.
I think I watched the original series for the cheese factor. Like, if I wanted something with ham and over-exaggeration, then yeah, I'll watch the original series.
So all ham, even the, all the way, I mean, maybe not Discovery so much, but
Next Generation is certainly ham.
Voyager's ham.
Voyager's very ham at the moment. Yeah. We're in series 6 of Voyager and it's very ham.
So, I mean, it's part of its charm.
It's part,
It's
Like,
part of the course.
And not just ham, but melodrama as well.
I'm still very interested in going back and watching the original series. And this has not, this has probably piqued my interest more. So, I'm keen.
Yeah, so thank you very much, everybody. And yeah, we'll see you for the next episode of Court TV Club.
And now, what are we going to watch?